Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Nobody wants to outlive their money, but it happens, especially for women. That's why Gainbridge offers the Parity Flex annuity, designed for women's unique retirement needs, with flexible withdrawals plus a guaranteed lifetime income benefit that keeps paying you even if your account balance is zero. Gainbridge is helping build a better financial future for women. Retirement income you can't outlive is the ultimate flex. Start saving now at Gainbridge.io. Visit Gainbridge.io/ParityFlex for current rates, full product disclosures and disclaimers, and other important information.
This crowd rises to its feet. Vaccaro slammed it home. Garland left wing. Three ball. Perfect. Garland went to the lane. Locked the Mobley. Pow. And Allen blocked the shot at the rim. Pow with the left hand and a foul.
Welcome to the Chase Down Podcast, part of the Cavs Media family. I'm your host, Justin Rowan. The Chase Down is presented by Fubo, the official streaming partner of the Cavs. Watch over 350 channels of live sports and TV, including Bally Sports Ohio, without cable. There's no cost and no commitment. Try for free at FuboTV.com/Cavs. We are recapping a very weird weekend for the Wine and Gold. The Cavs got an impressive win over the Minnesota Timberwolves and a disappointing loss against the Brooklyn Nets. We seem to just be rotating between beating top teams in the league and having a letdown the next night. Joining me today, though, is my co-host Carter Rodriguez. Never one for a letdown. How you doing, buddy?
Oh, brother. It's been a week in the Rodriguez household. Last Sunday, my son got pneumonia. This Saturday, my daughter got the flu. So, you know, we've been camping out in the basement, getting some good quality time so we don't get the recently pneumonia-riddled child sick with the flu. It's good. Things are good over here, Justin.
Well, you know me. I'm just limping around here with a recovering Achilles. But you know what? Just because you don't want to mix germs doesn't mean we don't want to mix great guests here on this here podcast. And you know what?
What kind of segue was this?
You know what? I'm freewheeling. I'm freelancing. I'm improv here. Very excited to be joined by Stephen Prejean Gardner, contributor to Bright Side of the Sun, as well as one of the hosts of the Take That for Data podcast on the PHNX feed. Stephen, how you doing today, buddy?
I'm doing great, man. I'm blessed. A little perplexed after that game that we just watched, but all is well in my world. How about you, fellas? How y'all doing?
Doing pretty good. Good. Yeah, go ahead.
That game wasn't a blast, but glad to have a Suns guest on to talk about. It's like the most. I was thinking about it before we were going on. Once Justin booked you, which is that. I feel like it's the most over-discussed, and then suddenly they feel a little under-discussed team. Like, they're kind of operating this, like, in-between space of, like, how much they matter. And, like, I'm excited to get your perspective on them.
Yeah, sure. I'm excited to dive into the Suns, too. And like I said, if we're looking at the trend of how Cavs games have gone recently, they've lost to some shorthanded teams, and then they beat some of the best teams in the league. And even though Phoenix has had an up-and-down season, I certainly... consider them to be a potent team that can play like one of the best teams in the league on any given night. But before we get into that, you had mentioned that you've watched the last two games from the Cavs. Describe your whiplash going from what I thought was one of the better performances with against the Minnesota Timberwolves, where the Cavs were locked in defensively, thought their execution against the best defense in the league was outstanding. What did you go through kind of watching this shorthanded Cavs team?
Not to act holier than thou, but we just got done talking about how reactionary fans can be. And I'm thankfully of the composed perspective on things where I can kind of apply the context, which is very much necessary, and understand the ebbs and flows of a season. And I think that, and this is me speaking without having too much interaction with Cavaliers fans, but for this team to have done what they've done with two of their best players out for so much time, they've created so much cushion being atop the NBA as well as the Eastern Conference that even a loss like tonight, and you know, some losses that they may have had over the past couple of weeks to like the Bulls and things of that nature, you can kind of bat an eye at it without putting too much weight in it in terms of stock and valuing where or assessing where the team is, because they can come back and win against the likes of, at the time that they played them, the two best teams in each respective conference. I think there's a lot of value in that. You talk about Evan Mobley not being available for some of that as well. You just, like, this team is wildly impressive to me. I already had a high standard for them, and they've even kind of exceeded that at this point.
Yeah, it's been impressive how they've kind of rallied in some of these games. I heard a stat on the broadcast saying that the Cavs have played six games now in March, and they've had five starting lineups in those games, which, one, it's wild that you've played six games in 10 days, but just the complete absence of continuity, I think, has been difficult. But overall, I didn't think that the effort was good enough against Brooklyn. I thought, you know, they came out, the turnovers were sloppy early on, and sloppy throughout the game. And, you know, when you turn the ball over like that, it's harder to kind of get your defense set in the half court. Like, even if you recover in time to prevent a transition opportunity, often, you know, you could be a half step back in your rotations and you know, your defensive continuity just isn't there. And I felt like that was definitely a contributing factor. And you look at how Brooklyn has struggled as of late. Like, this is a tough one to drop. As important as it was to beat the Wolves, and like, if you're going to make me pick and choose, like, I thought we were going to have a 2-2 stretch here. I just thought we were going to win the games that we lost and, you know, lose the games that we won. You know, from a confidence standpoint, I like beating the best teams, and I would pick that. But, you know, it is disappointing to not make up ground or continue to kind of extend that cushion that you were talking about, where, you know, you steal a game and then you take care of business against the teams that you should win and give yourself even more breathing room, understanding that it's going to take some time for guys to get back into the lineup.
And that's what they were doing in January and February when they went 18-2 in a 20-game stretch, which, like, you know, there's a reason that teams don't often do that because it's really, really hard. You know, I do think it's inherently the more confusing outcome. You know, it's harder to parse through the results. You know, it's almost a little more straightforward when you're trying to analyze what a team's doing. It's like, okay, they're shorthanded, but look at this. They gutted out wins against Brooklyn, but they just came up a little short, even though they fought hard against Minnesota. This is like, okay, what do we even make of this? Was Minnesota just having a bad game, you know, or did we just have a bad game tonight? Or did the Nets just go absolutely bananas from three, which they did, 8 of 10 in the third quarter, which is, that's a whole lot of threes, you know, and mostly pretty, pretty tough threes. I mean, some 35 foot heaves that were just going in. It was just one of those nights, you know.
Those were the payback for the Max Drew shot.
There you go. Oh, well, we earned a little karma. So, like, you know, I will say I don't want to glaze past that Minnesota game, because I do think it was one of the. I'll tell you what, Justin, I love watching some ugly basketball. You know, some defensive basketball. I thought that was a freaking slugfest. And I do want to just shout out, because we didn't get to cover it, Isaac Okoro's defense on Anthony Edwards, because my goodness. And I, you know, they mentioned that they played high school ball against each other on the broadcast. and you know, obviously both went to school in the South as well. Just kind of feels like one of those things where Ice is already an elite defender. He's like, also, I know this guy so well. And it showed. He went 7 for 27 for 19 points. Like, I mean, you know, 5 turnovers to 3 assists. I'd say that's probably one of Ian Edwards' worst games of his season, if not probably close to his career. So just wanted to shout out Ice in that game, and what a fun one.
Yeah. Absolutely. Go ahead, Steven.
So I think, man, Isaac Okoro, what a player. What a basketball player. I feel like even past the context that you guys brought up with those two having gone against each other in high school so many times on high volume, if you were to handpick the style of archetype player-wise defensively to guard somebody like Anthony Edwards, it might just be literally Isaac Okoro. The foot speed, the stature, the ability to be disciplined and not reach and gamble too much, but also do it enough to impact his rhythm and assess the actions that they like to run him in, the ability to contest jump shots on the move. All of those little things just kind of adding up. And then also the physicality that he brings, which is really accustomed to him. I think so highly of Okoro. I think I see a lot of Okoro in Josh Okogie. And he has to hit that same type of stride where Okoro is starting to see defenses slowly begin to shift in terms of the attention he's garnering from deep, which is allowing for him to spend more time on the floor and for them to get the most value out of him that they do defensively. But that dude is good. And obviously the playoffs are going to remain to be kind of seen in terms of how much that translates. But he's definitely in a space that they would ask for him to be in. And I think he's an integral piece to everything they're doing going forward as well.
Yeah, and I feel like several times when we've had games like this, the kind of letdown performances against a team that you should beat, obviously, you know, injuries were a factor in this one, but it was still, let's be honest, it's a game that they probably should have gone out and won. Anytime that we're sitting here and we're like, oh, you know, it was a flat performance, you'd like to get a little bit more burst out of Garland. I thought Jared Allen had a pretty rough game against Brooklyn after being, you know, really strong against Rudy Gobert in that Minnesota one. But I feel like Okoro is that one guy where every single night we're like, well, you know, it was a flat performance except for Isaac. Like he was out there making a difference. And one thing that I'm really enjoying, and I felt it more in the Boston and Minnesota games, where the officiating crews were just really allowing teams to be physical. As long as you're not reaching in, you know, you're kind of entitled to that physicality. And that's been a real change that you're seeing in more and more games since the All-Star break, where just the way that the game's being called is more consistent on both ends to allow some more physicality. I think you see those scores start to crater. And I feel like that really plays into the Cavs' hands because they usually play very good disciplined defense, you know, straight up physical. And Isaac Okoro, you mentioned like his stature, being able to be strong enough to get in front of Anthony Edwards where, you know, you're not forced to reach in, and dealing with his ability to generate space and how physically he plays offensively. I thought that one-on-one matchup was just outstanding. Like that's some of my favorite basketball. And one of the reasons why I've wanted the game to be called more like this and to be called by like the playoffs is when you're allowing physicality on defense, I feel like it becomes so much more obvious to the fans at home what a foul is and what a foul isn't, right? Like if a guy is straight up, there's a little bit of contact, but you're not reaching in, then that becomes clearly defined. And it's not that subjective thing where it's like, oh, how did we get that one and not that one, right? So I've been pretty happy with the officiating, and I definitely feel like, assuming this is the way it's going to go the rest of the regular season and in playoffs, that is something that's probably going to play into the Cavs' hands.
Yeah, one thing I did want to note that I really like that you said, Steven, about the way Ice has kind of developed his defensive game is early in his career, he was kind of a right place, right time defender, but wasn't kind of that event defender, you know? And that's tough in the league because these guys are so good that just doing your job is often insufficient. Like even if you do it really, really well. So like, you know, you mentioned him kind of reaching in at the right times, you know, leaving his feet at the right times, and like how that can throw a guy, you know, those kind of rhythm disruptors, you know, really play in your favor on that end of the floor. I really like that call out. Cause like, I do think that is the biggest difference between, you know, rookie year Isaac, who was, I thought, a very good defender as a rookie, to now is he is impeding space and rhythm in a way that, you know, only the truly elite defenders do without giving up ground, without lunging and reaching and getting out of position. And like Edwards just couldn't shake him. And to your point, Justin, about the physicality, I loved it. You know, it was, those were Like, I know that Edwards was like a very, very good high school football player. If I remember that was the book on him. It felt like two linebackers, like a tight end and a linebacker out in the middle of the field, just kind of jockeying for space. And it was really, really fun. And then, obviously, I think you got to shout out Jarrett for his career high, 33-18, going up against Rudy, who is you know, historically a very tough matchup for him. And you saw him smoke some in the first half against that length, and then just started getting an advantage, going into his chest, drawing fouls. You know, I know T-Wolves fans weren't thrilled with the free throw count, which 21 free throws is a lot of free throws. So I get it. But, you know, ultimately, like, I just thought Jarrett played a great game as well. And, you know, that was it. I feel like that was one of those marquee wins that kind of snuck under the radar because it was on a Friday. Mm. You know, people are out doing their business and like, but that's a marquee win. And I don't think it was discussed within the Cavs fan base as such. I think just because if you're not watching the rest of the league, you might not realize how freaking good this T-Wolves team is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's fair. And Steven, I want to get your thoughts on that game in particular. What jumped out to you? You mentioned you've been impressed with how the Cavs have kind of been approaching these games shorthanded, down so many key parts. What stood out to you on either end of the floor with the Cavs approaching that game?
I think there's three things that kind of stood out, and there's three things that have really stood out on the season as a whole. You got the obvious things like Donovan Mitchell just being one of the best guards in the entire NBA, and even growing off of the reputation he's already set for himself. But independent of that, just kind of looking at three things that have been consistent outside of that top tier, Jared Allen, first of all, everything he does from the ancillary sector of things, knowing how to space off of drives, not just to finish with authority, but to also be able to finish with soft touch at times, over even somebody like Rudy Gobert, who's literally contesting everything. That advanced step that he's taking, like you talked about, in being able to initiate some contact and really search out that contact with a lot more regularity this season, to then either navigate himself to the free throw line, which is something we didn't see as much as we've seen this season, or to obviously play through that contact and actually finish. I think those little things, just kind of looking at what kind of hamstrung them in the playoffs, just that flipping mindset to now he's catching those passes in the pockets. Now he's going up strong. He's not just going up with finesse, with more regularity. I think those little things definitely add up into his favor, especially with how many of the Cavaliers' perimeter players are able to navigate themselves downhill now. So seeing him play off of that, also seeing them lean more into him as a hub from the elbows, playmaking through there, whether it be the handoffs with Strus, I'm excited to see come back whenever he does, because he's added a new layer to the team. Seeing him get into those handoffs with Merrill, and obviously seeing what he does with Garland and Mitchell as well. I think those things are important, because I don't know if they necessarily trusted it as much as they did going into that period where Mobley and Garland were out. I think they kind of had to lean into it more just for functionality purposes within the process. And that's one of the kind of the golden nuggets that you got that stem from that. Isaac Okoro, we talked a lot about him already, but I think one thing we haven't talked about that I haven't had a chance to in front of a mic yet, at least, is the identity piece for the Cavaliers. We talk about him being physical, often being at the point of attack. He's setting a tone on a possession-by-possession basis defensively, and he's doing it with activity. He's doing it with physicality and doing it just by being solid and keeping guys out of rotations. That ultimately allows for, once the ball leaves his matchup's hands, everybody else is in position from the onset. So now the help is set. They're out of rotation. You got Jared Allen sitting on the porch now, which nobody wants to drive directly into him. And if Evan Mobley's playing, that's another layer of length. And then you add Dean Wade to that mix as well. That's a lot of size. And if you're able to keep yourself out of rotation at the point of attack with somebody like Okoro, I think he's just a walking identity piece for everything that J.B. Bickerstaff wants from this team. And I think those are kind of like the biggest things that stand out to me, in addition to just the defense in general. Mm. This team is just so good on that end of the floor, man.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Refinancing your car at Kemba Financial Credit Union can get you quick access to cash to help manage high-rate debts and expenses. Get up to $500 next day cash back, plus no payments for 90 days, and take cash equity out. Make your car work for you and drive away with extra cash. Apply at Kemba.org. Restrictions apply. Offer ends April 30th, 2024. Federally insured by NCUA.
Picasso knows your vacation home is your best home. It's the place that brings family and friends together. It's where you're the best version of yourself. Picasso makes it easy to co-own a luxury vacation home in amazing locations. Listings start at $200K for 1/8 ownership. Picasso does the hard parts for you. Luxury furnishings, maintenance, billings, scheduling, and more. With a home management team that provides support before, during, and after your stay, so you can focus on the relaxing, hosting, and making memories with family and friends. And you can resell on Picasso's marketplace anytime, historically for a 10% gain. With Picasso, you can stop saying someday and start building family traditions today in a vacation home you own and revisit time after time. Visit Picasso.com today to see thousands of luxury vacation home listings. That's PACASO.com.
Yeah, that's why it's staggering when you see a night like tonight where it's just right. Not clicking, right? And, you know, so often when I mentioned before, I didn't think that Allen had a particularly good game in this one, but so often when you do see kind of the bigs out of position, it starts at the point of attack, right? Where you're just kind of allowing offensive players to collapse, getting them out of position. I know that was a big thing in that Knicks series where RJ and all these other guys, we kind of get past that initial line of defense, and Allen's basically forced to decide, okay, am I going to leave Mitchell Robinson in the dunker spot and come up, or am I going to give this guy a wide open floater, right? And so frequently he's contesting the shot, that shot misses, but the offensive rebound is available there. So I definitely feel like he has improved a ton, and I'm really interested, like, hopefully Mitchell isn't out much longer, and the reevaluation of Evan Mobley's ankle is successful, and Dean Wade should be back soon. Missed this game for personal reasons, and fingers crossed on Max Strus. Can't believe how many guys I'm naming here. But when guys are out, typically that does generate opportunities for other players to gain chemistry, and you can kind of find those things. And I'm definitely really keeping a close eye on how the Darius Garland-Jared Allen pairing is working, because 2 years ago when they were both All-Stars, that pairing was amazing. When Evan Mobley wasn't on the court and it was just the two of them, they had a 117.2 offensive rating, plus 7.4. But then I had pulled this prior to the last two games where over the last 2 years, Garland and Allen actually had a negative net rating of 5.1 in their time together. And it's so funny that even with this being a 900 possession sample, the two games prior, ending with the Wolves, obviously this doesn't include tonight, moved their net rating for the last two seasons from negative 5.1 to 3.4. Negative 3.4, that is. Like, that's wild. Like, I see so often people will show, like, a 45-50 minute lineup data, like sample of lineup data, when you can have a 2 year sample get swayed by two games and 900 possessions, it just goes to show you that, hey, we should probably allow these things to have a little bit more time to breathe. But I definitely feel like if Garland and Allen can kind of rediscover that chemistry, and that's something that you can go to a little more frequently, I think that's another feather in their cap, because you never know in a playoff setting when foul trouble is going to dictate what the matchups and the pairings are going to be, or an injury or some other situation. You never know. You have to be able to make so many different combinations work. So I'm hopeful for that. And the other thing I'm hopeful for is that, you know, Garland and Sam Merrill can get a little bit more chemistry, because Merrill, over the last 20 games, it just hasn't been as effective with Garland as it has been with Donovan Mitchell. When he's out there with Mitchell, that's still clicking. Every other pairing just hasn't really landed. And you would think that that's a pairing that would work well. And frankly, like, I thought even tonight there was more opportunities where they had a two-man game going and Garland found him. He just wasn't able to knock down those shots.
Yeah, Merrill's 5 of 30 from 3 in his last 4 games.
Oh my goodness. I didn't realize it was like that.
He is. I just did an audit because I'm like, yeah, it just hasn't been good. It's going to happen even with great, great shooters, you know, and it's one of those things. And Sam sadly doesn't do himself any favors when he's slumping, because he still has to take outrageously hard threes, because that's like
true.
Part of what he's doing out there is like being willing to bend the defense. Like, he can't turn down the, like, unlike a lot of players, he can't really turn down the full sprint from the corner up to the wing on a pin down three. If he gets the space, he kind of has to shoot it. That's his job, to shoot it. So, like, you know, I certainly think like some of the data with Merrill is a little like, you know, it's just the lineups haven't, I just don't think the Cavs have been playing well enough in those minutes. And that's I think it's kind of been throwing it off a little bit. With regards to the Darius Jarrett pairing, I agree, and I think they actually have been finding a lot more synergy. Like, I thought it was really nice to see that even on a game, like, Darius has been kind of living on the extremes of either being a great three-point shooter but not being able to finish, or being a great finisher but not being able to hit from deep. Like, against the Wolves, he couldn't hit from deep. He went 2 of 10 from 3. However, like, he was constantly getting into the teeth of the defense, playmaking at 8 assists, had 11 two-point field goals. He was like shooting like 35% from 2 for a stretch for a few games. So, like, I do feel like he is starting to figure out how to get his angles with Jarrett again. And it's been really fun to see. You know, obviously tonight just had kind of a quiet game because, like, yeah, you know, the game kind of just got out of hand. But, like, I don't think it was any kind of step back for their game tonight.
Yeah, I think Sam is extremely important to everything that Cleveland's trying to do, particularly from a playoff lens. They talked about things kind of bogging down, especially in the half court, in the playoffs, showing from last season, just because of how many different pieces they were being dared to shoot from deep. With Sam Merrill, you know, he comes in the game, one thing he's going to do is get up those three-point attempts off of movement and do it at a cadence that's going to get a reaction out of the defense, like Carter just mentioned, in terms of bending it. And that movement piece is just so important when you have, obviously, the vertical spacers like Mobley and Allen in the interior sector of your offense. But also, when he's got the ball and he's coming off of those handoffs, or, you know, the two- and three-player actions that they involve him in, that means that either Garland or Darius Garland or Donovan Mitchell is either a pass away on the second side. Now that's putting the defense in situations where, do you really want to help off of one of those guys because he's coming off with movement and he's generating the tension and the reaction out of the defense? You know, it just puts the defense in a different type of situation when you have your primary ball handlers off of it, and somebody like Merrill, or even somebody like, obviously, Max Strus even more, is getting that type of attention because they're in movement and playing off of the activity, like we talked about with Jared Allen being able to connect and be such a hub for the offense at this point in the evolution of where things are going for them on that end of the floor. But yeah, that's just kind of what I really had on Sam Merrill. I've liked what he's brought. And I think, even though he obviously might not be the best in terms of like a lockdown defender, he's a very good team defender. He understands his coverages. He understands how to show and recover and get out of there so that he's not getting tasked with that late switch and then having to guard an elite ball handler in space. He's also solid with his rotations as well. And I think that's something that's consistent with everybody that has a helping hand in the rotation for JB Bickerstaff, is that they're solid at bare minimum with the rotation.
Not messing up helps a team a lot. Yes. Like, it goes a long way.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, especially in today's NBA where like offenses are just designed to make you make the wrong read. And like there's so much disguising of sets and kind of, as Nikias would say, seasoning thrown onto so many sets around the league that, you know, you're just going to have, if you got someone that just doesn't know where they're supposed to be, they're going to end up so far away from where they're supposed to be just from guessing. But to your point, Carter, like Sam is competing on defense. He's in the right spots and whatnot. And when you look at the lineup data, the drop off is on the offensive end. And just like instinctively, that should not be where there's a drop off. So you have to think, okay, it comes down to sample. It comes down to a whole bunch of other things. So we'll move on from what hasn't worked towards the Suns matchup. But obviously, before we get to the Suns game, we have to figure out who exactly is playing. The Cavs have a bunch of guys that are banged up. I saw that Darius had his arm wrapped in ice in the post-game locker room, so we'll see if he's awesome. Available. Devin Booker is a game-time decision. We'll need to see who is supporting the Cavs out there. But we know when we're on this podcast that Zoom is always supporting us. Support for this podcast and the following message comes from Zoom. 500,000 businesses connect using Zoom, a single platform for phone, chat, workspaces, events, apps and video. Zoom enables real-time collaboration for teams around the globe. Zoom, how the world connects.
Snag a job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer? Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Picasso knows your vacation home is your best home. It's the place that brings family and friends together. It's where you're the best version of yourself. Picasso makes it easy to co-own a luxury vacation home in amazing locations. Listings start at $200,000 for 1/8 ownership. Picasso does the hard parts for you. Luxury furnishings, maintenance, billing, scheduling, and more. With a home management team that provides support before, during, and after your stay, so you can focus on the relaxing, hosting, and making memories with family and friends. And you can resell on Picasso's marketplace anytime, historically for a 10% gain. With Picasso, you can stop saying someday and start building family traditions today in a vacation home you own and revisit time after time. Visit Picasso.com today to see thousands of luxury vacation home listings. That's PACASO.com.
Steven, let's start with the injury report. Do you know if Devin Booker is expected to play? I saw that he's been kind of ramping up towards it. What's the latest on him?
So earlier last week, there was a report that came out that they gave him a 7 to 10 day range to come back from his ankle sprain. And we're pretty much in the middle of that, a little bit closer to the 10. So I think the expectation is that he'll potentially be back for tomorrow, but definitely back on this four-game road trip that they're on, likely for the Thursday game against the Boston Celtics in Boston. So, and I think Frank Vogel mentioned pregame yesterday that he was genuinely surprised at how swiftly he's recovered from the ankle injury based off of the optics and obviously Book's reaction to it. So just kind of seeing that he's able to kind of play a little bit of, in warm-ups in yesterday, before yesterday's game, and then ultimately be transitioning from completely out to probable to now a game time decision for tomorrow's game with Cleveland, I think is obviously trending in the right direction. And these are games that definitely need him in, because obviously it's against a team that's of that same ilk in terms of expectations, but also where they expect for themselves to be at. And I think it'll be a good test if he's able to play.
There's definitely been some parallels both with the Cavs and Suns of just not having the core together this season. And, you know, it's tough when you have a limited sample of games where they have played together, and those games are either, you know, guys are playing through injuries or they're coming back from injuries and trying to kind of refine their footing. How has the evaluation process been for you with this Phoenix Suns season? Because, you know, obviously there's a lot of expectations. They've done a lot of all-in moves, and to not have kind of the appropriate sample from this regular season, is it just a thing where, hey, these guys are vets, they've done it before, they've all kind of been on very successful teams that we just need to get healthy for playoffs, or where do you kind of fall on that?
I think that's part of it, just knowing that you have three dudes, capital D dudes, that have shown that they can do it on that stage regardless of location of a game and regardless of opponent and what they might bring in opposition to, obviously, what they're trying to do. So I think that's definitely a piece of it. And I think Suns fans probably don't want to hear it, but I've been one of the people that have been preaching patience, because we talked about fans being extremely reactionary to the on-court happenings, positive or negative. There's never an in-between. And I like to think I've been of the extreme optimist side of things, just to kind of let them know, like, you know, this team was not built for not having Bradley Beal in the rotation, or this team also wasn't built for not having Devin Booker in the rotation. Same thing with Kevin Durant. So obviously you want to gauge where the team is appropriately, but at the same time apply the context of, okay, this is what this team looks like when they have all three, which is they have one of the best five-man lineups in all of the NBA when looking at teams that are looking at lineups that have played as many minutes as those five have spent together, speaking to their starting lineup. So just kind of looking at that, applying that context is important. I do think that you want to figure out how to operate without said pieces in rotation, because obviously injuries don't go off in the playoffs. Like, they're increasingly more likely because of the level of physicality, like we talked about, that teams are able to play at, but also players play more minutes in the playoffs. So the injury risk goes up come playoff time. So you want to have a contingency plan in place and have the reps in addition to that, in terms of style of play and all of that stuff, lineup wise, that you want to have nailed down. But I think it's important to know that you have pieces that have been there and know how to do what they do when they get to that stage.
The book on this team has kind of been that, you know, you looked at their numbers in last year's playoffs, and like, you looked at like percentage of mid-range shots in the offense, and the Suns were like, you know, they were like at 70%. No one else was at like 40%. It was like a ridiculous disparity between them and number two. And, you know, one of the criticisms levied against them is like, hey, yeah, you've got all this shot making, but that can't be your first call. Like, do you think they've made any progress on that front? Like, what do you think about kind of their offensive structure right now? Because when it's going well, it feels so unstoppable. But you know, you can see them kind of get baited into their worst habits. What have you seen from them this year?
Yeah, I think I'll answer the shot profile part of your question first. I think they've certainly addressed it in personnel, in terms of adding shooting, but not just shooting, but shooters that garner attention in terms of how they space around the court. You ask somebody like Grayson Allen, who on percentage and volume is the best three-point shooter in the NBA. Obviously, a lot of his shots come off of the gravity and attention that the big three generate. But you also, like we talked about with Merrill, you have to be able to knock down those shots. And he's able to, you know, obviously do that at a elite level clip. Talk about Eric Gordon. He hasn't had his best season in terms of shooting, but you still obviously trust that when you drive a kick, that help comes over. It's Eric Gordon that you're kicking it out to. And oftentimes he's spaced to the 4-point line, so his shots are going to be wide open more often than not. You trust that he's able to knock those down. A player like Royce O'Neal that you added at the trade deadline, he's another piece that can obviously play off of closeouts. He's shown a propensity to knock down shots at multiple stints in playoff settings. We talk about pieces like Damian Lee, who obviously hasn't played yet this season. There's potential for him to come back at some point, but whether he does or doesn't, he's another type of player that you have on the ancillary end of things that's going to knock down shots when he's in the game. He might not give you much else on the defensive side because of size and things like that, but he comes in the game, you know he can knock down shots. And I think they've been consistent in addressing that specific layer of who they're playing in their main rotation. And I think that's important because obviously the attention that the big three garner is, I mean, there's not many other teams that have a big three that's or a top three players that's going to garner as much attention as their three can, all in different types of contexts in addition to the mid-range play. And I think just having that functionality within the process and spacing is extremely important.
How have you felt about their defense? They've been middle of the pack this year. You know, obviously, this is a matchup that I'm curious about because the Cavs struggled, and one of the things they really wanted to address kind of this offseason was how their bigs attack the drop coverage. And, you know, you mentioned Allen's kind of playmaking in those kind of situations, and obviously, you know, some nights that's gone well and the shooters have hit down shots, knocked down shots, and then other nights it's not. Is that kind of what you anticipate them mostly going to try to take away a little bit of the pick and roll with the drop coverage against the Cavs tomorrow?
You're talking about specifically for the Suns attacking Cleveland?
Yeah, how the Suns will defend the Cavs in the matchup tomorrow kind of thing.
Yeah, that's something that they've been experimenting a little bit with. I kind of start with the 3-2 zone that Frank Vogel's been deploying over the last week or maybe a little bit over a week now. It's really just kind of supposed to be like a change of pace type of thing that they're trying to work into their defensive process. Hasn't been the prettiest of results. They've tried it in, I think, each of their last maybe three or four games now. And it's been very mixed results, but a lot more on the negative side than the positive side, just kind of figuring out the rotations and communication needed going up against different styles of lineups and just teams in general that they've gone up against over the last week and some change now. But starting with that, just that really speaks to how Frank Vogel is willing to experiment to figure out what works with this team. Earlier in the season, they tried the 2-3 variant. That didn't work as well. They went away from that. And now fast forward to the late part of the season, it's 3-2. I'm curious to see if they try to use that against the Cavaliers. I don't have the most confidence in it, but I'm just kind of trying to pay attention more so to the timing at which Frank Vogel is using it against teams. Is he trying to just kind of bridge the gap, or is he trying to extend a run? Is he just going into it to steal a couple of possessions out of a timeout? Just kind of gauging his confidence in it from there. But I do think that it'll be drop coverage against the Cavaliers tomorrow. And just really, they're defensively, principle-wise, they're trying to protect the paint more than anything. And you kind of see a little bit of the struggles that come with when that's your defensive approach, because against a team like the Celtics last night, they sprayed threes ad nauseum at a high volume, a higher volume than anybody. I think they're at like 41 attempts.
They take so many.
Crazy. But it works for them because of the driving kicks and how much attention their top players garner. So when you're protecting the paint, it's like, okay, cool. You just cut off this drive, but your help's also peeled in a little bit too. And now I got somebody like Derek White space one pass away, and they're getting up those shots off our high shot quality. I think Cleveland is a team that obviously they don't shoot nearly as many. Nobody shoots as many three-pointers as the Celtics. But they're a team that can also kind of counter that by being able to get into the spacing dynamics with players like Merrill, like we talked about. A player like George's Niang that can knock down shots. Obviously, Darius Garland has some highs and lows like we talked about. He's another player that can knock down shots and do that off the dribble. So I think it'll be a little bit of back and forth there, but I do think that it'll be drop coverage for the most part, unless we see Darius Garland get hot. And in those scenarios, we've seen Yusuf Nurkic get up closer to the level of the screen, up to touch, if not flat hedging out and then recovering. So I think it'll be a little bit more of a mixed bag, but more so drop coverage than anything.
Yeah, and that's something the Cavs have really been you know, it was clear they kind of spent all summer saying we're going to kill drop coverage from now on, because obviously the Knicks really exposed a lot of their weaknesses on that front. Darius has really worked in his pull up and floater game. Jarrett's short roll game has gotten much better. So I think that's going to be a big advantage Cavs. Plus, like, it's one of those things, you know, where I think for the Suns playing drop can be a little tough because of the way they're structured with all these super duper stars, like drop can be a lazy defense. You know, it's almost the easiest defense to play kind of soft, because you're like, hey, we're just keeping two on and, you know, we're leaving some space for them to live in. Whereas like the best teams play drop where their guards are scrambling over that pick and staying connected to the back hip of the guard. I do feel like there's kind of some hay to be made against a Phoenix team that, you know, Like, they just often aren't having that point of attack personnel that's going to keep that connection. You know, like, in a playoff series, Booker can stay connected. In a playoff series, Gordon's going to fight over. You know, obviously, and I wanted to ask you about Royce O'Neal, but I'll get to that in a minute. Like, I do feel like there is hay to be made there. And then, like, if Nurkic does have to go all the way to the level, like, I think there's enough evidence that kind of says, like, you don't want him coming out that far, you know? It is a big team, though, defensively. And sometimes the Cavs do have a problem with that. Even though they play the two bigs, they're the only two in their starting lineup. They're the only two bigs they play. you know, like, do you expect the Suns just to kind of throw this excess size at them? You know, guys like Bol Bol, who have had success against the Cavs in short stints, to kind of just, you know, if they're not going to do great, you know, in their drop coverage with their, you know, keeping two on the ball, do you think they might just kind of cover by being just huge everywhere else?
Yeah, that's the big curveball in terms of the pieces within their rotation is the emergence of Bol Bol. And I'm glad you brought him up because prior to Bol kind of staking his claim within the rotation, they were playing some extremely, extremely guard and smaller and wing heavy lineups where if Nurkic is at the level of the screen, which I've talked about, they've dipped a little bit more into the defensive versatility. If Kevin Durant's a pass away from the pick and roll or whatever action that has Nurkic at the level, that low man is a guard. And when you're going against teams that play a semi-big and a center or a bigger forward in the center like the Cavaliers do when Mobley's playing, that's compromising because you can be early with your help, but just off of stature, you're at a disadvantage. You know, so even if you are early there, they've been kind of working with those things and kind of figuring it out. And that's the, like I said, the beauty of Bol. He comes in and he's bringing size with all of those rotations that he's making. And they're at some of their best in terms of defense when he's on the floor. And I think that's a perfect matchup for him going up against the Cavaliers. And I'm curious to see if he can, A, stay out of foul trouble, but B, also have a little bit more of an offensive impact, which he's starting to dip more into in an opportunistic way. But yeah, I think this is the perfect matchup for Bol, and this is where the Suns, the new size that they've had post All-Star break with Bol, but also Royce O'Neal, is going to definitely be a plus for them.
Yeah, and you should probably feel confident about that based on how it looked tonight for the Cavs against Brooklyn's length, right? Like, it's, yeah. Phoenix has more talented, functional length, it'll be interesting to see how Cleveland adjusts to it. Like, yeah, it sucks that it's 3-4 and it's a back-to-back, and we'll see who's available for it. But, you know, those situations are easier when you are at home the whole time. I think as much as they had issues, you know, running out of gas and whatnot tonight, I also think they just didn't start in a high enough gear. And it'll be interesting to see if they come out with the same kind of intensity that they had with the Minnesota game. Because at the very least, you know, if they're committed to what they do defensively and the rotations are a little bit sharper than they were tonight, they can hang with just about any team. And really, when you look at it, like, that's how they beat Boston. That's how they beat Minnesota. It started on the defensive end and they were able to generate enough offense to kind of overcome what those teams are doing. So obviously, you know, Phoenix can score in bunches, but the one trend that I've seen kind of highlighted recently, and I think Vogel talked about it as well, is how Phoenix has been playing in the fourth quarters. Could you shed some light on kind of what's been going on for them offensively?
Yeah, that offensive riddle in fourth quarters is a little perplexing, and it's been sustained. I think a lot of I don't necessarily want to say it's all offense, because I do think sometimes they struggle on the defensive side, which naturally blends into the offense, because when you're losing your tempo and your flow that you might have established in the third quarter that got you a lead, and then you get to the fourth quarter and you're taking the ball out the net more often than you're not, now you're going against a set defense. Obviously, the if any team can play well against a set defense, the Suns can do it. But to do so and bang your head against that wall continuously over and over and over is tough. It gets arduous. So I think some of their offense stems from the defense. But looking specifically at the offensive side of things, they just kind of struggle with tempo in the half court at times. And I think some of the improvements we've seen with their process the last maybe three or four games has been them dipping into more movement. Instead of the stagnant catches and touches for Kevin Durant and Bradley Beal, and even Devin Booker before he went down with the ankle injury. They started getting those players in more movement, and you start getting them with more dynamic touches. That's getting the defense rotating. That's pulling at the strings of the help. And that's now allowing you to open up a player like Grayson Allen to knock down 8 consecutive threes like we saw in almost back-to-back games. And you start getting the values that Royce O'Neal brings when the defense is rotating versus them being at a standstill. And I actually have some written work coming on looking at the movement sets that they've been implementing into their offensive process, maybe even tomorrow morning potentially. But I think that part of it and them figuring out how to blend that into their process and then also figuring out when they want to go from matchup hunting, which is something they obviously would do potentially as much as any other team in fourth quarters, versus when they want to get into the pick and roll. And then finding that movement as well, blending that all into one process specifically for the fourth quarter and being organized in it, where you're getting into your actions with 18 seconds left, 17 seconds left instead of 9 or 8. That way you can play and read and react off of the initial look that you're getting is extremely important. So that's just, I feel like those have been the hiccups in their process, and they're starting to iron them out slowly. But that's something they definitely have to address. And I think the strength of schedule in this third stretch of the season is important for them to get through that.
You might be wondering why Justin and I are starting to giggle over here. It's
because the Cavs do
the same stuff at their worst.
It's so funny. You know. Anytime you listen to like analysis on why a team is struggling, like in the clutch or you know, in late game situations, fourth quarters, it's always, we're not playing with tempo. We're
starting,
you know,
the possession with 13 seconds left, 12
seconds
left.
We're slowing things down. And, you know, I think back to even when the Cavs used to be a lot more ISO heavy back like in those finals runs. Yes, it was isolation heavy because teams like to go ISO and not complicate things because they don't want to risk a turnover in those moments. But you at least would have like kind of that two-man action with Kyrie and LeBron, right? Like Kyrie sets a screen for LeBron, try to force a switch there. You get mismatch on one side or the other, right? Like there were little things to create an advantage first before someone would go to work. And it's always about trying to find that balance, right? Because this league is littered with stars that are able to do incredible things in isolation and put the game on their shoulders. And Phoenix is certainly a team that falls into that category, but it's just finding that right balance of trust. Cause that's usually, you know, first and foremost is trusting the guys that you're out there on the court to execute in those situations. And also just having the confidence to run your sets, because, you know, it's easier to let the clock kind of run down where it's like, all right, we've got to really value every single one of these possessions. But when you have a confident team that's just going out there and executing, I think back to those Warriors teams when they're at their best, man, they played with tempo. Even when it was a 1-point game where they were down one, it's the same thing every time and time again. And that's definitely something that the Cavs need to stride for as well.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Refinancing your car at Kemba Financial Credit Union can get you quick access to cash to help manage high-rate debts and expenses. Get up to $500 next day cash back, plus no payments for 90 days, and take cash equity out. Make your car work for you and drive away with extra cash. Apply at Kemba.org. Restrictions apply. Offer ends April 30th, 2024. Federally insured by NCUA.
Picasso knows your vacation home is your best home. It's the place that brings family and friends together. It's where you're the best version of yourself. Picasso makes it easy to co-own a luxury vacation home in amazing locations, listings start at $200K for 1/8 ownership. Picasso does the hard parts for you. Luxury furnishings, maintenance, billing, scheduling, and more. With a home management team that provides support before, during, and after your stay, so you can focus on the relaxing, hosting, and making memories with family and friends. And you can resell on Picasso's marketplace anytime, historically for a 10% gain. With Picasso, you can stop saying someday and start building family traditions today in a vacation home you own and revisit time after time. Visit Picasso.com today to see thousands of luxury vacation home listings. That's PACASO.com.
Yeah, I mean, it's just funny. It's almost kind of nice to hear someone else say it about the team they cover. Because it's like, okay, everyone's dealing with this in some form or fashion. I did want to ask you about Royce O'Neal. He's been a guy that, you know, he's super tight with Donovan. So he was from the Utah days. So he was often linked with the Cavs in the media. And, you know, plenty of Cavs fans were interested in him. You know, this is a team that just kind of is desperately needed, like, really reliable warm bodies, and he comes out, you know, in the 12 games he's been with the team, he's playing 30 minutes a game right away. What has he been like? How's the Royce O'Neal experience been since joining the Suns?
It's been a revelation. A revelation watching games live, and even more so watching them on film. And I think Royce is the type of player that if you were able to handpick players based off of who would fit your roster salary cap wise around the big three, he would be at the top of that list. He was actually a player I hoped that they were able to nab when they traded for Kevin Durant last season. So to see them be able to spin the block pretty much a year later and execute the trade and adding him, and just kind of seeing the positivity that he's brought in place of the players that preceded him this season, it's night and day. And I mean, I could literally talk for an hour on the positives that he brings to the team. And they haven't even dipped into the usage that they could potentially get out of him on offense. But just kind of looking at him just generally, in non-garbage time minutes, he has 732 possessions with the Suns. They're plus 13.6 in non-garbage time minutes with him on the floor this season. And you add to that, looking at a bulk of that value coming on the defensive side of the floor, they have a defensive rating of 105.8 with them on the floor. That's up from the middle of the pack defensive rating that Justin mentioned that they've had pretty much for the course of the season. And obviously that defense ranks top percentile in the league if it was to sustain over a season long stretch. And I think the biggest thing that comes with Royce is the accountability. He's a player that wants to play defense. And when you have a roster that's offensively inclined for like 85% of it, you want to be able to balance it out with a player like a Isaac Okoro. They can do things for you on the defensive side of the floor. He's playing a very similar role to Isaac for the Suns. And the communication piece, in addition to being able to guard up as well as guard down, be able to switch reliably, and also be a preemptive communicator. I think that might be the biggest thing the Suns haven't had in terms of just looking at the pieces that are in their main rotation. He's always communicating the physicality he's bringing. And he's just the perfect type of piece for this team. And the switchability, he just gets it done on the defensive side. And then if you kind of look at things from an offensive lens, he's been knocking down the shots that he's conceded. I was curious how teams would guard him within the Suns' offensive context and how that would play to his favor. He's knocking down his three-pointers, and teams are helping off of him pretty much the way that they did with players like Kata-based Diop. That preceded him in the rotation. So seeing him knock down those shots, but also see them be able to get some initiation out of him. So where you're getting Kevin Durant, Devin Booker, Bradley Beal, Grayson Allen off the ball. Now you're being able to start with him, and then they put those guys in movement. He's able to connect, playing off of the short roll and screening. They haven't quite dipped into playing like splits off of him like a little bit, but I think that's something they can dip into, especially with their small ball lineups. And on that side of the ball, he's just been just kind of a steadying presence. The ball security goes up when it's in his hands because he makes quick decisions, but he also makes smart decisions. And he's just such a positive piece for everything that they're doing on both ends of the floor.
If you listen to our podcast, like, you know, something that I kind of hit on a lot is that I feel like in the modern league, it's much less about having the top end guys on a night-to-night basis, but not playing guys who can't play, playing guys who are killing you just by being out there. And like, I feel like, you know, like the difference in context for, like, you know, because some folks around the Cavs were interested in them trading for a guy like Royce, and, like, you know, Royce would be going to take, like, you know, a steady rotation player's minutes. Like, the difference between that and Royce coming in and, you know, amalgamating a bunch of minimum salary players' minutes, like, the difference between a $10 million player and a minimum player, I feel like, is more important than ever.
Mm-hmm. And the other thing that jumped out was you said that Royce has played 732 possessions, I believe, for the Suns.
Yep, 732.
He has played more possessions for the Suns since the trade deadline than the Cavs core four has played this season.
Oh, man.
That's tough.
Over 100 possessions more.
Oh, man.
That's... One thing I did want to mention about Royce that I thought you mentioned is he's got one of the weirder profiles, because, you know, obviously I've had to do some homework on him, knowing that, you know, his name was thrown around with the Cavs. He doesn't finish at the rim at all. He's one of the worst rim finishers in the league. So normally these guys that are not finishers, that are 3-and-D guys, they catch, they shoot, and if it's not there, they just have to keep moving the ball. A stunningly good playmaker, despite not being a finisher or really much of a dribbler. Like, can you speak a little bit about that level of connectedness that he kind of has? Because it's not like he's, like, running sets per se, but, like, he just kind of, I feel like that kind of connectiveness is so good for a team that can play a little disjointed.
Yeah, I think the big thing with his playmaking is just how quickly he processes the defense. So obviously, most of the time when he has the ball, it's going to be coming off of the attention garnered by one of the big three, if not Yusuf Nurkic, in addition to those big three. And with the defense often being tilted when he has the ball, he's able to either shoot, dribble and attack, or make a pass. And there's just, when you have the offensive talents and the spacing and the shooting that the Suns have, there's just infinite depths of value that you get from a quick decision maker. I think Greg Popovich is called a playing in 0.5. He's one of the quintessential type of 0.5 playmakers. He has the ball. It never sticks in his hand unless he's retreat dribbling to reset action. And there's just so much value in that when you're always playing in an advantage, to not reconcede the advantage that you just created by allowing the defense to get set. And I think that's also some of the issues that the Suns have run into within their offensive process in fourth quarters. The ball gets sticky at times, but when Royce is on the floor and he's involved in action, it doesn't. And I think that really just speaks to why he's seeing so many 30-plus minute games, like Justin mentioned, as a player coming in. Frank said he was only going to play him so much early on. He played about 15 to 20 minutes in that first game against the Golden State Warriors, and it's just been on a steady incline since then. It hasn't been a slow ramp up at all. He's like, nah, this guy is a glue piece, and all his values are really just seeping at this point for the Suns. And I think that playmaking, it hits even differently when you feature him the right way, which is, like I talked about, as a screener. A lot of times on offense, he's going to be guarded by the lesser of all the perimeter defenders on an opponent's team. So now when he's screening, you're able to bring that specific player into action. I call him Waldo's. You kind of want to figure out who your Waldo is on defense. Bring him into action. If not, get a reaction out of the defense or out of the defense. You do that. Now he's playing within that advantage, like we talked about.
I'm stealing that. I love that.
For sure. And that quick processing, when he's got somebody like that guarding him, it just allows for you to play in the advantages all the time. And he's making those quick decisions, getting the ball to players that can knock down shots. I think he also has a little bit of value in that floater range. You talked about him not being able to finish at the rim, but I think he has some value he can provide in terms of hitting that floater, kind of how Jay Crowder did for Suns fans when he was with the team in that similar type of role. So there's just so much value that Royce brings, and I think he's the perfect type of role player to have around everything you already have established with your top six or top seven players.
I like that comp a lot, you know, when it comes to Jay Crowder and the role that he played there. One last question I got for you before we get you out of here. Really appreciate you taking the time to talk to us tonight. I am curious. We've done a lot of kind of breaking down the X's and O's and whatnots. I like the feelings. I like the emotions when it comes to sports. And Phoenix has gone through a big change where, you know, they had a lot of kind of homegrown talent and guys that were there, you know, still around for that first finals run. And there's been such a kind of dramatic shift to these established veterans and whatnot, you know, cashing in those chips when it comes to Mikhail. Aiden's gone. How is
even
that
just the carousel of vets that are just getting added like every other week? It's like, yeah, okay, like they added Thad Young. Okay, they added Royce. Okay, they added this guy.
We're just bringing in all of these guys that are exactly what they are. What's that experience been like for you? And kind of how do you manage those expectations of, okay, we're no longer, you know, kind of the longer runway team that we thought we were. We're you know, we're really living for this moment. We're right here for the here and now. We're trying to contend right now. What's kind of that change of gears been like for you, both from, you know, an analysis fan standpoint, however you want to kind of tackle this?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. And it's something I've definitely thought about a handful of times this season, just off of my general intuition, but also off of seeing some of the discourse from Suns fans. I don't know if you guys like kind of are in touch with that specific sector of fans within the NBA realm, but Suns fans are, they love vibes. And you kind of, I mean, even go back to before this rendition, you go back to when they added Chris Paul to the team. We saw a lot of Suns fans that weren't necessarily as high on Chris as I feel like they should have been when you get him for somebody like Kelly Oubre, because Kelly Oubre was a player that ingratiated himself with the fan base so well. The vibes we talk about, Tsunami Poppy, as they call him, he's literally a vibe player, and he has that type of, that style of play that also engages fans as well, being the athlete on the wing that plays above the rim and plays with that athleticism and that fire like that. Just kind of seeing that, and then you look at it after they added Chris and then ultimately added Kevin Durant last season. A lot of fans were talking about how they missed the vibes and the energy that players like Mikal Bridges and Cam Johnson and even Campaign, now that he's not there, they just brought like a certain level of youthful exuberance to the team, where now those players are kind of phased out by way of trades. And obviously, if you have a chance to get an all-time great like Kevin Durant, especially after seeing the shortcomings that you saw in the playoffs that preceded him and the reasons why those things came, you don't like hesitate. If you have that opportunity, you go and do that 10 times out of 10, and then you live with what comes after that and build around it. So that's just kind of where I've been context-wise. And I feel like just understanding the why behind why you go and add Kevin Durant, obviously he's an all-time great player, but those issues that you had in terms of generating extra attention from a defense outside of Devin Booker, and obviously with the matchup cross matches that teams were putting on Chris Paul later in his career, you want to kind of mitigate some of that as well. Mikal Bridges, you're really good in movement. You're really good creating off the dribble. Apples and oranges, you're not Kevin Durant though. Like that, no. it gives a different type of reaction out of a defense and allows for you to dictate even more on offense. So just kind of looking at it from that lens, I don't think fans have really understood it, just off of the discourse I've seen on my timeline, and how if Kevin Durant has an average game, which average for him is like 25 on efficient numbers and borderline all NBA level defense this season, he has like a slight slip up in play. And people on Twitter are talking about the Mikal Bridges and Cam Johnson rendition. And like, I get that, but also like there's this unicorn that you have and everything that comes with adding Kevin Durant to your team, you know?
You know, it's just historically, I don't love when teams add Kevin Durant. That's just my personal
opinion. No, we're not big fans of that. You're barking up the wrong tree there, bro. You know, but yeah, I mean, I get it. It makes sense. You, like I always say, the most fun year for any fan is, other than when you win the title, because winning the title is always the most fun, but only one team gets to do it. But the most fun is the come up year. It's the year where it's like, where we are more than the sum of our parts. We are exceeding expectations and we're coming. And I wasn't expecting to see that happening. Like that is the most fun because like, we're always going to watch our favorite teams through the lens of expectation. The Cavs are better this year than they were last year. And I think most fans have had on balance, at least the ones I've talked to seem to be having less fun, you know? And I think it's probably just a direct byproduct of the fact that like, okay, you're just carrying more on your back up the mountain, and you know and when you're carrying all that expectation, it weighs on you. Weighs on every loss feels worse, every win doesn't feel quite so good, and like so I do think like I think that's a universal problem. Like yeah, maybe yeah. The Suns did it on turbo mode, but like ultimately, I do think it's just the universal challenge of fandom, and to me, that's why I always go back to like it. Enjoying your team has much more to do with your mind frame than what the team is doing. Because it's up to you to choose how to interpret the data flying into your face, you know, and ultimately, like, I know that there are fans of teams like the Pistons that are having more fun than fans of teams like the Cavs on individual levels, and it's all mindset. So, like, I think it's one of those unique conundrums of fandom that just isn't ever going
to
go away.
I used to have so much fun with those Sexland teams. Are you kidding me? Like, yeah. And we were not good at all. And awful. You know, it's a big part of why I try to really compartmentalize both regular season and playoffs, right? Like, it's two totally different things, and trends from the regular season can translate to the playoffs. I think, you know, overall, I push back when people say you can't learn anything from the regular season. There's usually lessons in there. They're just a lot more context dependent, and you have to really be diving in, and you're just not going to be aware of that with all 30 teams. But I compartmentalize it because I'm sitting here watching 82 games over 5 months and 3-4 games a week, watch it twice every time.
You're a psycho.
I am a psycho.
I'll never abide it. Abide rewatching every game.
Yeah. Well, it's my lunch break the next day is going to be me watching all possessions from last night's or tonight's game, which is going to be a real fun time. But, you know, that's such a big part of your life that if you're not getting some enjoyment out of it and if you're not kind of in love with the process, man, it's like you're really missing out. You are stressing yourself for no damn reason. And the playoffs are going to be its own beast. This regular season hasn't been as fun for me because I haven't got like the catharsis of, all right, that's what happened in the playoffs. Let's see this team fully together, clicking it and building on what we've done last year. But, you know, just because they haven't been able to, and, you know, I think this is true of both the Cavs and the Suns. Because they haven't been able to put it all together in the regular season doesn't mean the individual lessons that they've learned throughout the regular season can't come in handy in the playoffs if they get healthy at the right time. I mean, as much as I'm nervous and angsty of, oh God, we're running out of games. When are we going to have time to be together? Miami Heat didn't really have that last year. Like, they were, you know, banged up, missing guys throughout the entire regular season. Kevin Love after the buyout, like, those minutes were not going well. They didn't start going well until the playoffs. They pulled them in the play-in games, and then it clicked in round one. You never know when things are going to click, but you're just going to feel better about the odds of them clicking if you have some proof of concept before then.
Exactly. I couldn't agree more. And I think the Miami Heat making the run that they did, obviously there's not going to be that many teams that are going to be able to do such a thing, going all the way through the play-in realm to going against the one seed and obviously making it all the way to the conference finals and then the NBA finals after that. I don't think everybody's capable of that, but I do think there's a template there to where you just want to be patient enough to have all your pieces in tow and then be able to obviously, like we talked about with the Cavaliers in that segment of this podcast, the identity piece is important. Because if you're able to always rely back on an identity and then you have your pieces that kind of uphold that identity to the extent that you need it to, that's where you want to be. That's literally what the Miami Heat did going through the play-in realm, ultimately going against the beast at the time that was the same rendition of the Milwaukee Bucks that won a championship a couple of seasons removed from.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're able to stamp your identity on that entire series with a dog like Jimmy Butler at the top of it and then a bunch of dogs that kind of fall in alignment with that from there underneath them. That's where you want to be. And I do think that obviously the Cavaliers are built differently than that Miami Heat team. But I do think there's some similarity there with how they perform on the defensive side of the floor. And one thing that always travels, whether you're talking about from home to road or from regular season to the playoffs, is defense. And the best way to give yourself a chance on the playoff stage is by playing defense. And they have obviously a defensive-minded coach in JB. Then they have a couple of pillars, Jared Allen, Evan Mobley, Isaac Okoro, and then they have a bunch of do-your-job type of defensive pieces like we talked about earlier that can just get it done. There's just so much value in that, and that's maybe the biggest reason why I have a lot of trust in this Cavaliers team this season.
Well, we're going to need that defense to travel because this is the last, well, not the last homestand for the Cavs with this game in Phoenix, but it's the last until the last week of the regular season. They will be traveling between every single game for a month. That will be very interesting to monitor. They are going to be in a hell of a race in the Eastern Conference here for the seeding. At least the Knicks and Magic lost tonight, so there was some benefit, but the Milwaukee Bucks did overtake that two seed. Cavs are going to need to win one of those games against the Pacers to get the tiebreaker there. But, man, they're going to have to earn it. And I think ultimately that's going to be good because the Cavs haven't finished particularly strong in the regular season the last couple of years. Variety of reasons, but you still, you know, want to be able to go do that. Steven, thank you so much for spending some time here. Really do appreciate it. It was great getting to talk to you. Before we wrap this up, let the people know where they can find you and what you got going on.
Yeah, I think the easiest way to kind of follow me is on Twitter at StayTrueS.3 on the screen below my face. But also in addition to Twitter, where I do a lot of my work and I pub a lot of my work, I do a lot of work as well on the writing side with Bright Side of the Suns. I do a lot of podcasting with PHNX as well as with CHGO for the WNBA with the Chicago Sky. And then also all of my work, I usually accompany my written work or my Twitter stuff with film sessions on YouTube as well. And you can find me on YouTube at my first name and my last name. So Steven Prejean Gardner 3, just with the ad in front of that on YouTube. And yeah, anytime you want to engage, I'm more than willing to on just the NBA or the WNBA as a whole, if not team specific, as long as you're willing to do so from an unbiased perspective. I think we, as, and this is why I appreciate you guys' podcast, because you're able to clean up the discourse and just add more of the entertainment, but also do it in contextualized things, which I think the contextualization dynamic in it all is, it's missing. It's missing, man. So it's my pleasure to be able to talk hoop with you guys and keep doing the great work that you are doing.
Well, thank you so much, but I'm biased as hell. You don't have to lie. I mean,
it's
right
okay. It's okay. No, it's okay to be. It's okay to be biased. But like you talked about previously, Justin, you talk about, okay, I can have my biases, but I'm also gonna go and watch the film to either support my claim or show that I'm wrong. So you know, just those little things and checks and balances is important. So it's not just all I'm always right or I'm always wrong. Like there's, you know, just doing it the right way. That's why I appreciate the podcast and the platform you two have established.
The best moments of the podcast is when we're wrong, and it's always fun. I'm biased with what I root for, and I try to be objective with the analysis. I think that's the sweet spot. And yes, absolutely, everyone go check out Steven's work. You know, as much film as I watch, I still feel like a novice when I watch the people that do great breakdowns like yourself. So appreciate all the work you're doing. And appreciate everyone that hung out today on YouTube. Make sure if you want to support the podcast, you like and subscribe. Click the notification bell so you know when we're going live. If you're listening via podcast and you want to support us, leave us a rating, leave us a review, subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe, and help cook those books. If you want to be part of the Chase Downs exclusive Discord chat, send a screenshot of that review to chasedownpod@gmail.com. However you choose to support us, we really do appreciate it. Make sure you guys are staying safe out there. Until next time, go Cavs.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cb for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Nobody wants to outlive their money, but it happens, especially for women. That's why Gainbridge offers the Parity Flex annuity, designed for women's unique retirement needs, with flexible withdrawals plus a guaranteed lifetime income benefit that keeps paying you even if your account balance is zero. Gainbridge is helping build a better financial future for women. Retirement income you can't outlive is the ultimate flex. Start saving now at Gainbridge.io. Visit Gainbridge.io/ParityFlex for current rates, full product disclosures and disclaimers, and other important information.
Are the old world picturesque shores of Europe calling you? Set sail on an adventure with Avalon Waterways. Enjoy an elevated cruising experience. Avalon Waterways offers smaller ships, bigger experiences with fewer people and more of, well, everything good about river cruising. Don't just dream about quaint towns and cobblestone villages. See them for yourself and make lasting memories. Discover limited time offers today at AvalonWaterways.com.